Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pieces from Prison Podcast. I am your host, Ariel, and this is my sister and co-host, Adriana.
Hi.
So I'm still waiting on our letters to keep rolling in, but I have another death row inmate that we'd like to share with you guys. One reason that the death penalty is difficult is because there are some people who I believe could be wrongly convicted. It's happened before, and I'm sure there are people who are incarcerated now who are innocent. So I came across this particular case, and this man is widely known for possibly being wrongly executed. That man is Larry Griffin. Larry Griffin was found guilty of murdering Quentin Moss on June 26, 1980. Quentin was shot in a drive-by shooting in St. Louis on a street corner. The shots struck two men, Quentin Moss and Wallace Connors. According to the coroner's report, Mr. Moss died of 13 gunshot wounds to various parts of his body, including his shoulders, left lung, heart, and head. The car was found abandoned that night with the murder weapons, as well as a traffic ticket made out to Reggie Griffin, the 19-year-old nephew of Larry Griffin. At Larry Griffin's trial, a year later, the only eyewitness testimony came from Robert Fitzgerald. He was a career criminal from Boston and an admitted drug addict who was in St. Louis in the Federal Witness Protection Program. Mr. Fitzgerald said he and a friend had heard the shots from behind the hood of a car while replacing a battery. Mr. Fitzgerald testified that he had a good view of the gunman and memorized the license plate. He identified Larry Griffin in a lineup of photographs at the police station and later identified the abandoned car. A witness to the shooting gave police a description of the car and also identified Larry Griffin from a group of police photos as the man in the front passenger seat who fired the shots. The investigation revealed that the deceased victim, Quentin Moss, had been arrested on January 2, 1980, in connection with the death of Dennis Griffin, brother of Larry Griffin. Moss's mother told police that on the afternoon of May 13, 1980, her son told her he had been shot at the corner of Sarah and Olive. Police had identified Larry Griffin near the scene of the May 13th shooting. Larry Griffin was arrested and charged with the murder of Quentin Moss on June 30th, 1980. Larry was executed on June 21st, 1995. Mr. Fitzgerald changed his account at a hearing in 1993, saying that a detective had shown him only one photograph, declaring, "We happen to know who did it." It's important to note that this case has no DNA evidence.
Okay, so I'm going to read a little bit about the NAACP, whose Legal Defense and Education Fund did some research on this, and they wrote a report on their investigation. Because when you're reading that, it seems pretty, like, you know, a done case. We have an eyewitness who says that they saw who committed the shooting, and that's it. But the NAACP went ahead and did an investigation regarding the innocence of Larry Griffin, and they interviewed three witnesses to the shooting. The witnesses are Patricia Moss Mason, Quentin's sister, Michael, I don't know how to say his last name, Ruggieri. He is the police officer who was first on the scene, and Wallace Connors, who's the second victim of the shooting, and Ariel mentioned him earlier. So Patricia Moss was there during the shooting, as she had been walking toward her brother when it happened. She didn't get a clear view of the person who did it, but she did see Wallace Connors. Importantly, she was sure that there was no white man nearby before the shooting or when the police had arrived. So maybe now is a good point to say that the eyewitness, who was kind of like the key eyewitness, Mr. Fitzgerald, he is white. Is that correct, Ariel? And everyone else in this case is black.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so she says that she's sure that there was no white man nearby before the shooting or when the police arrived. She also says that nobody was standing over Quentin Moss after he was shot. The next witness is Michael Ruggieri, who is now retired, and he was the first officer on the scene. He wrote the first police report and testified that Fitzgerald was taking Moss's pulse when he arrived. So that's why it's important when Patricia says that she didn't see anyone over her brother Quentin. So he wrote the first police report and testified that he was taking his pulse. He also said that there was a car nearby and that he saw Fitzgerald in a car later and that he was also with a black man and a child. Finally, he says that he was driving away and that he was stopped and brought back. In a recent interview, he now says that there was no white man near Quentin Moss when he arrived. He says that he would have thought that was a shooter, a possible shooter, and that he would have called in for backup or approached more cautiously. He also says there was no car parked near the curb and no black girl. He says that after he arrived, he looked over to see a white man taking Moss's pulse and calling for an ambulance. He walked away from the scene, and Ruggieri says that he drove him to the police station to turn him into homicide. When he was shown a transcript of his testimony, he was surprised, and he says that the testimony was not correct and that he did not remember testifying in that way. So that's interesting that he testified and basically changed everything, I think.
It sounds like, to me, it sounds like they just wanted so much to catch the killer that they each, or the most important people in the case, the witnesses, kind of stretched the truth to make it, to get a conviction. At least that's what it sounds like to me.
And the investigation says that Michael Ruggieri was not asked if he was told this information from Mr. Fitzgerald. And so to me, that's maybe like insinuating it's a possibility that he was given that information and then testified that. So the third person they interviewed was Wallace Connors, and he is the second victim. He did not testify, but records did show that he was unable to identify the shooters. He says that he was an acquaintance of Quentin Moss and that he had been there and chatting with him on the corner. He says that there was no white man on the corner and no car parked east of the shooting. He was about 15 feet from the car where shots were coming from, and he is certain that it was not Larry Griffin. And this is interesting because he actually knows Larry Griffin through his older brother. So there, he says that they weren't very close, but that he is familiar with him and that he is certain that it was not him. So overall, the two biggest pieces of evidence that are coming from this report to, you know, kind of show his innocence is that Michael Ruggieri, the first officer on the scene, says that the eyewitness testimony is not true. And the second victim, Wallace Connors, says that the eyewitness was not there, and that Larry Griffin didn't commit the shooting and was also not there. I was looking at a piece by the New York Times, which we'll link, and the family of the victim thinks that there was too much attention paid to the white witness and that his sister, who was also there, was ignored.
So it sounds like there is a lot of doubt. I know that when you're on the jury, has to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt, and it sounds like, I mean, I'm sure it sounded like at the time, but it turns out that the things that they went off of weren't even true. And it's important to note that this man never admitted to anything. He said he was innocent till his execution. He made it very known that he was innocent, which, I mean, it's possible there are a lot of people that say I'm innocent, but it sounds like he could have very well been telling the truth.
So I think that's brings up one of two reasons why I'm not a big fan of the death penalty. One, as I think the goal should be rehabilitation. The second being that we get it wrong a decent amount of the time. I mean, I think there are a number that I can think of in the past few years where some evidence has come out and shown that a person who was executed was not responsible for a crime. And so, I don't know. If we're not so sure, and I mean, in this case, there's no DNA evidence, like you said, people are changing their testimonies and recanting. So that's, I think, enough to maybe think that it should get a second look.
I know. I believe there are some people who have committed like really heinous crimes and have no remorse. So those are the type of people I'm like, okay, like I get why people are for the death penalty. But then when I hear like innocent people could have been executed for no reason, that's enough for me to be like, I don't know.
And I mean, I would just have to imagine that the case you're talking about, just, you know, people who have no remorse, is probably less common.
Yeah. When I was like reading through like last statements, I couldn't find his last statement, by the way. I looked everywhere, but I was looking through others, and most of them, a majority of them, were so apologetic, apologizing to the victim's family, which, I mean, I hope they would. That's what a decent person would do. But only some of them were like, I'm innocent. And I don't think, and then a lot of people declined to make a statement. I'm not sure why. But yeah, a majority of the people apologized for what they did, even though, I mean, that can't do anything, can't bring the person back, can't take away grief from the family, but
it's still a positive.
Yeah.
So the report from the NAACP suggests that there are three people who are actually responsible for the crime. They are all in prison due to different crimes that were committed, and they do not have a chance of parole. These people are Ronnie Thomas Bay, who owned the car and was arrested but released, and two others are Reggie Griffin and Ronnie Parker, and they were kind of all ran in the same crowd. And so yeah, the report suggests that these people are actually to blame, not Larry Griffin, and that he was wrongly executed.
Hold on. I think I missed something earlier. The car didn't even belong to Larry Griffin?
No, the car belonged to someone else. Okay, so there's also two different things going on where people are saying that there was another car. And they were talking about someone giving the police a license plate number.
Yes.
And I think that was maybe Fitzgerald who got the license plate number and gave that to the first policeman who was on the scene. But they don't think that that is actually correct, because if it were, that license plate number would have been written on the police report, and it wasn't. Mm. There are, like, a lot of... It's hard to read. There's a lot of details in So we'll link everything so you can read even more, because I left some things out because it did get very confusing. There was a lot of back and forth, but you can check them out if you're interested in the deeper
I was details. Reading this one thing, and it was like, if he would have been, if this case would have been happened today, he would not have been convicted. And I think I might have to agree with that.
It is a lot just based on one person's testimony that they were able to say, okay, you're guilty and we're giving you the death penalty.
Yeah.
Maybe because the police officer testified in the same way. So that probably, like, you know, bolstered it up, but he changed it and then said, I don't know why I said that testimony. So I think, you know, it's worth looking. I don't know. I think that you still have to, like, reapply to get a new hearing, even when people say that that wasn't my testimony, or I'm changing my testimony, or whatever I said wasn't true. But I almost feel like that should be, like, an automatic, something goes into place, or, like, we do something, because I don't know, that has a big impact.
Yeah. Well, let us know your thoughts if you think that Larry Griffin could be innocent. And like Adriana said, we'll be linking all of our sources. That way you can see for yourself. So that is the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back with another episode next Tuesday. As always, you can follow us on our socials at Pieces from Prison Pod on TikTok and Instagram, or visit our website at pfppodcast.com. You can subscribe and follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so that you know when new episodes are being released, and rate us so we know how we're doing. Thank you again for listening, and you'll hear from us soon.